Our next case, State v. Honkin. State v. Honkin. Mr. Stelnick?
Hello. My name is Mitchell Stelnick. I represent Robert Honkin, the appellant in this matter, and he was the defendant in the trial court case. Mr. Honkin was convicted of two counts of conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. He appeals his conviction on the following errors. First, and probably the primary issue, is we would argue that the evidence demonstrated that there was only one crime of conspiracy, one overarching conspiracy rather than two separate crimes, and we argue that that's a double jeopardy issue. Second, he raises an issue of ineffective assistance of counsel. And finally, he raises an issue as to his sentence being excessive. Trial in this matter was held on stipulated facts. The facts that were stipulated, and I'm going to go through them briefly because I think it's relevant to the double jeopardy argument, but the facts that were stipulated to were that the appellant contacted a gentleman named Robert Shirley. There were numerous communications between the two of them. Initially, the contact was for some construction work. It was stipulated that Mr. Shirley advised law enforcement that he was paid $400 by Mr. Honkin to kill Mr. Honkin's wife. It was stipulated that he did in fact receive a $400 payment and that Mr. Shirley used that money to purchase a gun, and that Mr. Shirley and another gentleman, not Mr. Honkin, had drove by quite a few times to make some plans. Well, and then the factual basis, as was stipulated to, was that that was never carried out, and that Mr. Shirley left the conspiracy, left the plan, so to speak.
And isn't that what this case really turns on? So Mr. Honkin agrees with Mr. Shirley for a contract on his wife's life, Mr. Honkin's life. Mr. Shirley backs out, and he tells Mr. Honkin that, I'm done, I'm not doing this.
Right.
Then about, I don't know, several weeks, maybe a month passes, and Mr. Honkin contacts another individual to do the exact same thing. The question being, when you have one conspiracy end and another start, does that make it still one conspiracy because the mission is still the same, or does it make it two separate conspiracies?
That really is the issue in this case. And we would argue that Mr. Shirley leaving the conspiracy did not necessarily end the conspiracy, and that it continued throughout.
Well, who's left to conspire? Just Mr. Honkin, and can you have a one-person conspiracy?
Well, I don't think it was the amount of time that went by until he made the contact with the second person, Mr. Flores. I think the amount of time was about 10 days or so. But
does it matter whether it's 10 days or 2 weeks, 3 weeks?
Well, then that's a fair question. The argument that I make in the brief is that this is a conspiracy that compared to a hub and a spoke. So Mr. Honkin was the hub, and then there were the different spokes were these different gentlemen that were being involved. So the argument that we would make is that Mr. Shirley leaving the conspiracy and Mr. Flores or whoever joining the conspiracy, I don't think that the conspiracy ever ended, regardless of the time frame in which Mr. Shirley left and which Mr. Flores entered.
It seems like it's more like a tinker toy, where you have the hub, and you put in a spoke, and then you take out that spoke, and you put in a different one.
I certainly understand the analogy. The argument we make is, and the court might make a different determination than what we have argued, but our argument is that the time frame was close enough where it wouldn't have made a difference, but that Mr. Shirley leaving the conspiracy and Mr. Flores entering the conspiracy did not end conspiracy number one and create conspiracy number two, the argument is that the conspiracy continued throughout. And that was primarily because the object of the conspiracy remained the same throughout, and that that was never carried out. And I cited the case in that this, I believe it was the Nebraska Supreme Court had held that conspiracy is ongoing until the central purposes have either failed or been achieved, and that was State versus Britt.
Well, wasn't the question in that case whether statements could be used if they were co-conspirators?
I do not disagree that there were separate issues at that case, but the statement remains the same, that I think that, again, the primary objective of the conspiracy here being the murder of Mr. Honkin's wife, that objective remained the same throughout, and that there were just different people added to the conspiracy and taken out, but that it remained the same conspiracy throughout rather than being a separate one each time. You know, otherwise could an argument be made that was there yet another conspiracy once Mr. Neely was involved, or was there yet another conspiracy once law enforcement contact was made, because there was a gentleman from law enforcement that posed as a somebody that would participate. So I argue that there is one conspiracy throughout the entire situation, and his conviction for two conspiracies.
What if you look at this more as a breach of contract case, where there was an agreement with one person? That agreement ended. It really doesn't matter how much time goes on, but then a second agreement is entered into with a second individual, and that's the better way to analyze this in terms of whether there's one conspiracy or two.
I certainly understand the argument, but when there's, I guess that being a contract issue appears a little bit different to me than, say, the way we would analyze it in a criminal case with the case law that I've cited.
Do we have a Nebraska Supreme Court case that is similar to this?
No, Your Honor. The case law that we cited specifically regarding the overarching conspiracy was the State versus Britt case, which I readily admit is distinguishable. And then we've cited a Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals case, and that is United States versus Thomas, that's cited in the brief. And that lists a set of factors that the court should consider when making a determination as to whether there were multiple conspiracies or a single conspiracy. And that case was addressed at the trial court level, by the way. The district court judge did use the analysis from that case to make her determination as to there being two conspiracies as opposed to a single conspiracy, but we would argue that that was not the right determination. And this court, it being a question of law, obviously would make an independent determination. The remaining two issues, one was that he argued that the length of his sentence was excessive. We don't dispute, of course, that it was within the statutory guidelines. The primary argument we would make there is that the district court judge made some statements that she was treating the situation as one in which Mr. Honkin's wife had actually been murdered. We believe that that was probably an abuse of discretion, that there was error there in a sense that there was no actual violence that was actually that occurred. So the other factors, I think, relating to Mr. Honkin that we've addressed in the brief, I do think the court brought those into the proper consideration, but the one issue is that there was no actual violence that occurred, and I think the court's ruling indicates that there was treatment of the situation as though violence had occurred. And the final issue that he raised was an issue of ineffective assistance of counsel, and The issue that Mr. Honkin had was he was concerned, or that we've alleged in the brief, was that there were some mental health issues that he had that he felt could have been addressed as part of some potential defenses. Now, there is evidence that those were raised as mitigating factors at the time of sentencing, but we will concede, of course, that we're kind of constrained by what the evidence actually was. And
so the record would be insufficient for us to determine?
Well, I think that's going to be what the state is going to argue, and I don't dispute that the record, that there's not a lot of evidence in the record, or not a lot of information in the record that would allow the court to make a determination of that. But he does have a different counsel now than he did at the trial level, and so he's required to make that argument at this time. And so we are aware, at least, that trial counsel was aware of the mental health issues because they were raised at the time of sentencing. So we would ask that the court grant the relief we requested in our brief. Thank you.
Thank you. How long did Mr. Stellick go over? I want to add that to Ms. Vincent's time.
May I please report? My name is Melissa Vincent. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, and I represent the Appalachian State of Nebraska. In this brief, Honkin assigns 3 errors. However, I intend to address only one, namely the double jeopardy issue. The other two I will submit on the brief. Although Honkin does not dispute that he conspired to kill his wife, he contends that the evidence established only one conspiracy rather than two, and that his conviction for both conspiracies violated his right against double jeopardy. I disagree. As far as conspiracies go, this case is about as simple as it gets.
As a practical matter, his sentence was the same on both and to run concurrent?
That's correct. And just while we're on the subject there, I mean, I think the district court obviously was engaged in hyperbole. Sends him as though he had been murdered, because if that were the case, she would have maxed him out at 50 and consecutively in 50 years. He's not, as it stands right now, he's left for 22 and a half. But Honkin initially conspired with Shirley to kill his wife. However, that conspiracy was terminated by mutual February, at which point he missed 10 days later. He then entered a second agreement with Flores and ultimately Peterson to commit the crime. The two agreements were separated in time and involved different participants. There is simply no basis for concluding the two agreements were part of the same conspiracy. Consequently, there is no.
What about his argument that the mission was the same? That makes it a single conspiracy.
That's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. You can have more than one conspiracy that has the same. Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals said that in U.S. v. Thomas, which the district court relied on. They also said it more recently in U.S. v. Air, I believe. I have it cited in my brief. Yeah, it is Pierre from Eighth Circuit, 2015.
Thank you. Nope. Knew she wasn't going to take the extra 33 seconds.
Yeah. Well, we would ask that you affirm the judgment. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Case is submitted. Counsel is excused. Thank you for coming.